The Quintessential Podcast is proud to announce that we have a new presenting sponsor, Axia Time. Axia Time is a really cool watch company focused on ultra-custom watches to commemorate life's greatest accomplishments. Watches whose styling and quality match the significance of the accomplishments they represent. Axia Time is also partnered with all the leading lacrosse organizations to create All-American timepieces for high school boys and girls and college men and women. Axia Time even creates timepieces for elite awards like the Tourton and Naismith. If you're interested in a high-quality, Swiss-made timepiece to commemorate a great accomplishment, you need to check out their designs at axiatime.com. That's axiatime.com. If you're celebrating a team achievement, like a state championship, national championship, or even world championship, you have to check out the timepieces they created for teams like Jesuit Dallas, the University of Maryland, and even the USA U21 World Champions. Quintessential Podcast welcomes into terrific friends of the show. Chris Cotter joins us live from Atlanta. Paul Carcaterra joins us from Connecticut. I'm in Baltimore, Maryland, where it is. We got light flurries today. No delay in school. My only issue is getting the dog out. My dog, Millie, who's a little schnauzer, is like allergic to rain and snow. And so I take the dog out. I'm there with an umbrella this morning in the snow trying to get the dog to go potty. Kark, how do you enjoy
Are you testing me? You kind of poking the bear here? Yeah, we have a snow day. There's probably like, I don't know, 7 inches. They should have called school. Rarely do they make the right decision. But as a child growing up, nothing was better than a snow day. As a parent, nothing is worse than a snow day, especially if your son is 16-year-old Grayson Achilles Carcaterra, who will drive you literally to drink.
Does he want to go outside and play like in the snow, or is it like, does he want to go outside and do activities, or no? It's like, that's not happening.
It's a little bit of both. He's unrealistic with his expectations. Like, hey, drive me to Kai's house. Well, Kai's down at North Carolina. He's a sophomore long stick mini. I don't think I'm driving you to Kai's house.
When I was a kid, I'm telling you, and I know this sounds like the old cliche about your dad, how he used to walk to school uphill in the snow both ways, you know, everything. But like, I used to have to ride my bike to school in the morning, a couple of miles. And I mean, in Colorado, I don't remember having a snow day ever. And think about how much it snows in Colorado. Like, it was just like, you're going to school, you're going to work. Like, that's it.
They know how to handle it. It's like when I went to school in Syracuse, like, people don't bat an eye when there's 9 inches. Like, the infrastructure is built to deal with that stuff. People are driving rear wheel drive, you know, cars 60 miles an hour. They just know how to do it, man. Like, they don't care. So yeah, snow days are brutal for me. Look, I'm very transparent. My son, Grayson, he's autistic, and he's the best kid in the world in so many ways. And he's, you know, he's given me a level of patience that I thought I'd never have as a human. And I have great perspective because of him. But snow days are not one of those days where I grow from him.
We're going to get snow in Syracuse, I think, this weekend. A little bit, not much.
Yeah, let's go there. What are you guys heading up on Friday? Kark, and what do you guys do now that you're back on site up in your old stomping grounds, Kark? You got a favorite spot you like to go to dinner?
I've taken Cotter there a few times too. Sant'Angelo's. It's Liverpool. It's probably max 5 minutes from the university. They have these Utica greens. It's like it's this dish that's just unbelievable. It's a mix of greens. They put like hot peppers in there, breadcrumbs, a lot of olive oil, Parmesan cheese, some type of beans too. It's to die for. I love the greens. Cotter goes straight carnivore always. But it's been on his mind. I got a text from Cotter last night, like, hey, Fridays could be busy at these places. Make sure you make a reservation.
That place is nuts on Fridays. On weekends, like, they park in the front lawn. People up there, like, they don't even care about finding a spot. They just get sideways in the lawn and hurry up to get in line. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a family Italian spot, and those are my favorite Italian spots. I do not like white cloth Italian. I like straight up home style Italian, where they have to wheel you out after your meal. Like you're like a swollen tick.
You got time on Saturday game day to work it off. Your game's at 6 o'clock on ESPNU, Maryland at Syracuse. And to me, it's a game of the week. How will you kill Saturday, Clark?
Saturday, hopefully, I would love to get a workout with Cotter. But he's really particular with his workouts. And he's not the type, because it's such a big part of who he is and his DNA. Like, he doesn't seek you out to work out. And I think he's the type of guy, like, if you're like, yo, you want to go for a workout? He's like, do I really want to do this with this guy? So I'll probably work out on my own at the hotel. And Cotter loves to find local meathead gyms, and I'll let him talk about it. But he kind of seeks them out, don't you, Cotter?
Well, yeah, I mean, the hotel gyms are, most of them aren't going to work. Some of them are okay in a pinch, but most of them aren't going to work. So I'm trying to find out. That's exactly
Tell them
right.
Why it won't work. This is the total meathead reason. Tell them why.
Well, there's not enough weight there. I mean, that's so, like, the first thing you do is you look at the dumbbells. How high do the dumbbells go? That's your first indication. But I like to find, if I could find a meathead gym at a, you know, every spot we go to, then that's my go-to gym from now on. Like South Bend, I got a spot in South Bend I go to every time we go there. And it's just like, now that's my spot there. So I like to find them in each town. I don't have one in Syracuse yet, so maybe I'll find one this trip.
Yeah. Hey, Quint, this is the classic thing about Cotter. You know, like, we all live on the road with our jobs. You know, we cover college football too, and we're creatures of habit. So we're very habitual in terms of our patterns. You know, when you check into a hotel, like, I'm a little nuts. Like, I make sure that I have, you know, some extra sanitizing wipes, because I like to do some things in the room where, you know, I sanitize the remote control, the door handles, all these things. Cotter's thing is, like, he checks in. They're like, oh, can I have your Marriott number? By the time he gives his last number, he walks into the hotel gym to see the dumbbells and see if they have sufficient dumbbells for him. If not, he's out.
That's not uncommon. Someone else I know does something very similar, usually during the week on the hotel's website.
Classic.
What do you guys think about this game? I think it's going to be a good one. 6 o'clock, ESPNU. I'm on earlier in the day on, I think at 1 o'clock. I got Hopkins and Loyola, so we got a nice little doubleheader. But Maryland-Syracuse, to me, is the game of the week. Clark, you both have called SU already, correct?
Yeah, we had the opener against Vermont.
Yeah,
we did. You know, for me, I think this is the most exciting team and most anticipated team for Cuse since 2015. I thought 2015 they legitimately could have won the national title. They had a phenomenal team. They were ranked one for a bunch of weeks in the season. They had Kevin Rice, who was the attackman of the year, Randy Stotts. They were loaded in so many different spots. This team, to me, though, is different than most Syracuse teams that I've seen, because they do have a superstar in Joey Spolino, make no mistake about it. He's got 26 points in three games. But the way they share the ball and the way that they have anticipation in their games in terms of being one pass ahead of the ball at all times, it's really fascinating. We saw glimpses of this last year when they averaged 14 goals a game with such a young offense, and they had such a heralded freshman class. But to me, they never really got into the true flow because they were really struggling at the faceoff X. And now they have Mason Cohn, and it's only three games in. And I know he's a Division III transfer, but he's a Division I athlete. He's committed to Army to play hockey. He is a beast at the faceoff X. And they have this freshman, Johnny Mullins, in terms of a 1-2 punch. I can't remember them being this confident going into games with faceoff guys, you know, since Ben Williams, who was on that 2015 team. So when you give an offense that shares the ball at this level, repeated times to tucker out a defense because of their ball movement, it's a different kind of a beast to match up ball movement wise when you're playing Syracuse. I think the ball moves at hyperspeed. It's a beautiful lesson for any coach to show teams when he's going into their high school season or you're going into your youth season, like how sharing the ball really looks. And their stick skills are incredible. Guys like Owen Hiltz, and I mentioned Spolina, Jake Stevens, and And, you know, English, the transfers from Princeton, those guys have given a lot of different types of depth and stick handling skills. And I haven't even mentioned Michael Leo and Finn Thompson and Christian Mulé. Like, they're so skilled on offense. But this is obviously going to be their biggest test because John Tillman knows how to dissect a team and scout against them. And make no mistake about it, they will go after Syracuse's short stick defensive midfielders. We've seen a lot of inverting. Quentin and I have been in touch about Maryland in terms of their style early in the season. They like to bring their midfielders from up top to behind. And I think that's going to define this game because Syracuse's short stick D middies are untested right now. It's a really young and inexperienced group.
Yeah, who's for Maryland, who's going to be the guy? You know, like Molliver's back from injury. You know, like you think about that, that's kind of the biggest mystery for them. They've gotten two tough wins, which is good for them. You get a couple of tough wins in February. I always think it pays dividends down the road. You know, start with a difficult schedule. They've done that. But now for them, it's kind of like, you know, Clark, you and I were talking about it. Zapp is amazing on the back end. Wehrman's playing, you know, back and McNaney's back healthy. It's kind of like, okay, you've got kind of the foundation, if you will, of the specialty guys, Fogo, the goalie, you got your best close defender there playing at a very high level. Who's going to be the guy on the offensive end that scares another defense, that takes games over, that's you're going to be your guy who can win one-on-one matchups? That's kind of the question I have going into this year and this game, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a great point because you think of the number one at the University of Maryland. It was always an offensive player until last year when they gave it to Brett Makar. Now Ajax Zapatello wears it. So to your point, like normally it was given to that guy on offense, right? The Logan Wisnoskis, the Jared Bernhardt, the Matt Rambos of the world, Connor Kelly, like, those are the guys. If you go way back when, it's Joe Walters. So you always had that proven offensive guy. For me, it's probably Braden Erksa. He had 10 shots last week against Loyola. He only canned one. So he can prove to be a volume shooter. I think his quickness and the way that he played as a freshman, I think there's a lot of pieces to his game that you would love to see continue to grow because he's very electric with his first step. He's not afraid to go to the cage. As a freshman last year, he was gutsy, man, in big spots. So I think he's one guy that you could kind of ride offensively. And I think, you know, when you look at the team as a whole, even when they won in 2022, they shared the ball. So I think John Tillman's offenses are always predicated on ball movement, shifting and manipulating defenses. So I think there's a lot of pieces to like about this offense, but at the end of the day, they're going to drive teams nuts because of two players. Logan McNaney in the cage. He was the MVP of championship weekend in 2022. And I feel like he's the forgotten guy because of Liam Entenmann and Notre Dame. And, you know, you have guys like Will Mark, and there's a lot of good goalies out there. And he was injured last year and missed the majority of the season. Early season, if you watch him play in the two games and in the scrimmages, he's been amazing. So he's going to drive teams crazy on that end. And then let's not forget, too, Luke Wehrman is the all-time leader in faceoffs won at the University of Maryland. And he's been battle-tested since 2021 when he took that last shot against Virginia in the national championship, which missed. And I just think his growth, just his journey as a whole, he's so battle-tested, more than any face-off guy in the country. And yeah, I know Jake Naso might be the first-team All-American, but big spots, Wehrman's been in more of them than any player in the country at that position. So when you have a guy who could stop runs in Logan McNaney and a guy who could create runs for your offense in Luke Wehrman, they're going to drive teams nuts, especially when Tillman is getting deep into scouting reports and he's going to control the ball and do some things that really make you take your head and want to go through a wall.
Yeah, Maryland's formula is very clear. Starts with those specialists. When McNaney's making clean saves, they will run. You know, they scored on a couple trailer breaks against Loyola. But otherwise, the Terps are playing pretty slow. Cotter, as you alluded to, they kind of lack an alpha on offense. It's been team offense right now. Thought Maltz was kind of dangerous on the inside. And that brings up the questions here. What's Syracuse's short stick defense look like? Is their interior defense better than it was a year ago? I mean, I see improvement from Alexo. I see improvement from Billy Dwan III. I got to tell you, I love that jersey. Cuse has got the names on the back of the jerseys. And to see Dwan III To me, that's one of the coolest things I've seen all season. Where do you think Syracuse is defensively to deal with the way Maryland's going to play here?
You know, I think for me, Syracuse defensively, you mentioned a couple guys, Riley Figueres too, might cover Irksa. I can see that being a natural one-on-one matchup. Billy Dwan III, and it is awesome. I'm from his dad's hometown, and I know his grandfather too, who's an unbelievable man. You went to college with his dad too, so you know Mr. Dwan. So to see Billy Dwan III on the jersey, I love that too, Quint. He's the traffic cop, and he's kind of the conductor of that defense. He really knows the game. He's a coach's son, and his lacrosse IQ and instincts are incredible. So his position on this defense against a Maryland team that will invert a lot will require him to really play at his top form. I think the D-middies are going to be so tested in this game because Maryland inverts a lot, taking the midfielders from up top, from behind. And you have guys like Carter Rice, who had some minutes last year. He's the probably the most experienced D-middy on this team. Vinny Trujillo is a sophomore short stick D-middy, hardly played last year. Jake Spallina is a true freshman. His minutes obviously are growing as each game kind of comes, but untested. I would be shocked if John Tillman doesn't attack that unit a lot. And it takes Syracuse out of their comfort zone because they haven't seen a lot of inverts in the first two games. Not a ton. They've controlled the ball. They've controlled the tempo. So it's going to require not only really good one-on-one defense, but I think this unit is going to be asked to think a lot more in this game than they've ever thought.
You know, so you also, Q, you mentioned Sam Alexo. I think it's interesting that, you know, Alexo was on close defense last year and playing out of position, and Coach readily admits that, Coach Gade, and yet he's like, so I bring in Matt Wright from North Carolina, and yet I can still move Alexo back to LSM. He obviously has a lot of faith in Riley Figueres, young kid who missed all of last year with an injury. He obviously has faith in him because he's got an all-ACC caliber LSM in Matt Wright. And yet Alexo's getting minutes at LSM. He obviously feels like I can pull Alexo from close defense and count on Figueres, Clark. Don't you think that's a little bit of that move that he obviously has faith in Figueres?
Yes, and I think you bring up an interesting point because you can only have four long poles on the field at a time. And when you put Alexo and Matt Wright up top, one's going to be on the bench. Yes, that gives you great depth and you need two long stick middies. But the top four poles on that team, in no order, are Alexo, Matt Wright, Billy Dwan III, and Riley Figueres. But you really take out the Matt Wright Alexo piece because you're splitting time at long stick midi. So yeah, they do like the upside of Riley Figueres, and they should. He was the top rated defender nationally in his class coming out of high school. He tore his ACL in the fall of his freshman year, so he's getting back to speed. So I'm interested to see, like, if you have two big dodging attackmen. You know, we saw Virginia last week, and Quint called that game. When you have McCabe Millen scoring five goals, and I think at least four of them were unassisted, and you have Connor Schellenberger, you have two guys that are going to handle. Is that a week where maybe you bump a guy like Sam Alexo back down? It gives you some flexibility. Is this the week to do it? I don't think so. I don't think against Maryland you're petrified of their attack where you would make that move. You would continue to have the depth up top with Matt Wright and Sam Alexo. It also lets you rotate them on wings. And that's another thing, too. When you think of Syracuse and the growth at the faceoff X, you have the actual specialists in Mason Cone and Johnny Mullins, who's a phenomenal athlete. And I think they're the two strongest guys in the weight room on the team as well. You've also enhanced and beefed up the wing play for 50-50 balls. I mean, Jake Stevens is an incredible ground ball guy, the senior midfielder from Princeton, the grad transfer. And then Matt Wright, we've seen him when he's healthy, how good he is on the floor. He's a Canadian. He played at North Carolina for many years and is a vacuum cleaner at times too. So I think if Weirman does win the initial draws and clamps, I expect the wings to have a lot of say in this game as well.
I don't sense that either team is going to feel any pressure here. You know, one thing historically, you go into the Dome and games can take on a different tenor in that place. Trust me, been there, done that. The women's team plays Maryland at noon on ESPN Plus. This game's a 6 o'clock game on ESPNU. If the dome fills up, if they can get 5,000 to 10,000 fans, to me, that can swing this game. You got head coach Gary Gade, who's been really aggressive in the marketing of this program as he morphs into Roy Simmons Jr. in terms of the way he looks on the bench. But Clark, you know it. Like, there's a different vibe that goes on in the dome sometimes when this program was in their heyday. Does that happen on Saturday night?
I do. I think now, as much as we mentioned that Syracuse people will drive rear-wheel drive cars 65 miles an hour in a snowstorm, are they going to drive to the dome to watch the game if it's snowing when they could watch on TV and hear our two loud mouths? So they're smart about that, too. So I think if it's not snowing, I think we could have up to 10,000 people there. I think if it's snowing, I think, you know, you're going to get something probably in the 4 to 6 range. I will say this, though. I think unequivocally all the pressure is on Syracuse in this game.
Do you really?
Yeah, 100%. I think Maryland has won so much and is such a proven commodity in the lacrosse world. They've won more games in the last 10 years than any program, right? They've seen some highs and plenty of highs, way more highs. They've hit some lows. So, like, I don't feel like there's any pressure on Maryland. Like, you feel like if they lose this game, Tillman's a phenomenal coach. He'll figure it out. They'll grow. They'll get him back. There'll be a quarterfinal or Final Four team kind of in their sleep. It happens every single year where his teams are always playing their best lacrosse late in the year. I feel like the expectation for Syracuse after blowtorching three teams that, let's be honest with you, aren't juggernauts, and the offense is playing this way, and you have Spolino at 26 points, and he's wearing number 22, and you know, they've done a phenomenal job, too, of having games. I don't know if they've done this intentionally, but their games are at unopposed times where the rest of the lacrosse world isn't playing games, so everyone's watching, everyone's talking about this. I'm on text chains with alumni. Like, they think, oh, we're back. There's a lot of pressure on Syracuse because I think for them to be officially back, they need a signature win early in the season to make everyone in that building believe that they're back, but also nationally. Like, when have you felt like there's been this much buzz around a Syracuse team? And I know 2020, they finished the season undefeated. They didn't beat anyone when they were 5-0 and COVID cut short the season. I just feel like this team has such expectations because of they gave you a taste last year and how young they were. Now they're a year older and they've fixed some of their problems, which are face-offs and defense. I think all the pressure's on Syracuse.
Yeah. Knowing what you know about Tillman too, think about, because I was thinking about the way they ended last year, you know, I mean, they got housed by Michigan in the Big Ten title game, losing the first round of the NCAAs. Maryland just doesn't do that anymore. But I feel like for Tillman, and maybe that his almost stoicism works its way down through the team. You know what I'm saying? Like, that doesn't bother him. Like, he's not thinking about that. It's not like there's a revenge tour. He's not thinking like, oh, everyone's talking about the beginning of the year. Everyone's talking about Penn State and Hopkins and Michigan in this conference. No one's talking about us. I don't feel like that phases him, Q. Do you feel like Tillman, that would bother a guy like Tillman or even and maybe his team because of everything kind of feeds up through him?
No, I they're so compartmentalized. I think they're so into today, taking care of business and practice, into this week. You know, they're going to be pretty level-headed. Now they're a little more experienced than they were than they were last year in some spots. I do think that this team, you know, the way that last year ended, I felt their 2023 team actually played with the burden of the 2022 success. And now we're kind of cut free from that. The constant comparisons. It just the 2022 team was one of the greatest teams in the history of Division I lacrosse. And to follow that team was kind of a burden I felt in 2023. I think this team sets its own course. Again, I worry about their offense based on tape I've seen both against Richmond and then Loyola. I want to spin things nationally. Sheen and I had that Loyola-Hopkins game at 1 o'clock on ESPN+. It's a good week this week because we get to see the Ivies. Basically, everyone's in action this week for the first time this year. you know, we've set up the top 20 and there's still so many question marks. Teams like, you know, Army and UMass squared off in Atlanta last week. I just want to get your general thoughts, guys, on anything that jumped out at you. Clark, you bumped into the West Point lacrosse players, Keep the Change gang, in the airport. What'd you learn about Army?
Oh, it was so good. So I was down in Clemson. They opened up their new lacrosse stadium, which honestly, it is so crazy, gentlemen. The women's lacrosse complex at Clemson is, without question, the best facility in lacrosse. And it's not even close, because a lot of these other schools that have great facilities, they share it with other Olympic sports, and then maybe they have their own stadium, but nothing is like Clemson. So Clemson has their own facility and shares their stadium with no one. So like Hopkins has a really nice facility, the Cordes Center, but they share that stadium with football and every other sport, right? Ohio State and Michigan, these incredible facilities that they share the facility with, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 other Olympic sports, and then they have their own stadium. Clemson has both, all to their selves.
Yeah.
It is amazing. You should see this recovery center that they have off of the facility with, I don't know, there must be 30 machines in there that are probably 50, 60, 70, 80, who knows how many grand, because there's salt water tanks, there's cryotherapy, there's, you name it, they have everything. Sleeping pods, all Clark, the one right thing next about, to their facility. It's
like,
nuts.
The one thing about Clemson is they have endless land. Like when you talk about when they expand athletically, like the football facility was like, where are we going to put it? Let's just clear that 1,000 acres over there.
Yes.
And we'll build this. Is that what they did? Where is it located?
It's a great point. And I feel the same way, Cotter. So it's located, if you know where their softball stadium is, it's like up the hill past the golf course. Look, man, it's like, you know, Johnny Dangerously in Roman Maroney, knock down that wall, knock down that wall, knock down that wall. If Clemson wants to build, knock down that tree, knock down that tree, knock down that tree. They can, they have endless amounts of land, and their stadium is right next to Lake Hartwell, which is beautiful to look at. It checks every box. So you asked me about Army, and I kind of just went off on a tangent because I was down in Clemson. So I'm flying back from Clemson because I was down there doing some stuff with Charlotte North, because we have a series coming out called The Cross where we do some great storytelling with the men's and women's games. So she was calling the game down there with Drew Carter. I was kind of a guest on the second quarter, and we promote our show for the season. And then on the way back, I flew out of Atlanta, Cotter's stomping grounds, and the Army team was there. And those guys were so cool. And you know what the greatest part about it is? They were all dressed up in their uniforms, and they were so respectful. But they're real college guys too. Like, that's what people don't understand, man. They're just like any other team that's going into an airport and flying as a team and doing some things and having fun and laughing. And I took a bunch of pictures with the guys. I ran into Jacob Moore, and we had a great conversation about how hard he shoots. I wish he could line one up on Quint, man. That guy shoots like 130 miles an hour. UMass played zone against them. I think he was able to have 3 goals. And when you leave that guy untouched, man, Quint, it was a great group. You just felt like there was a lot of chemistry within the team, and a lot of smiling too, man. They're a bunch. I think, you know, they had a tough game with UMass, but that game historically is always tough. I think Army's a team that went to the quarterfinals last year. They're a sneaky potential Final Four sleeper, if you ask me.
Army plays Rutgers this week. That's another series that's been really, really tight. These are important games for Army because their non-conference schedule isn't the toughest. Yeah. So they win these games, it's really going to set them up. And I think the Patriot League is looking really positive this year. I got to tell you, I think Navy's much better than they were. Colgate showed me something. The way they took down Penn State, and they stood toe-to-toe with Cuse. I just love their attitude. You know, I didn't have them in my top 20 this week. That's really my only regret. I probably should have given them more respect.
Where did you have BU?
I got BU in the mix too. I mean, obviously the Patriot League, you can make the argument that the Patriot League may be stronger than the Ivy right now, but we'll see. You know, Ivy debuts this weekend. I think that'll be a big storyline. Cornell's got Lehigh, you got Yale and Nova. Penn plays Georgetown. So I think this weekend is really kind of the true opening weekend of the season.
Yeah, interesting for Georgetown too. And the Big East is kind of interesting, Q, in that you had Denver when they got the upset win on the road at Hopkins. So good start for Coach Brown. But then on the flip side is Georgetown. Let's not forget, Georgetown started 0-3 last year and then won 14 in a row. So maybe there's no time to panic at this point in time for Georgetown, but certainly a win over Penn would be huge, because then they travel to South Bend. You and I have that game in 2 weeks. You lose this game to Penn, you got to go to South Bend the week after. You start 0-4.
Yeah. If you're a volume shooter, Q, and you're a guy that's, you know, likes to get to the rack, man, Georgetown has created some volume shooters. I mean, Tucker Dordovic took like 1,000 shots last year. Graham Bundy right now in two games, I think he's 3 for 21. So he has to find his stroke. It's an offense that generates opportunities, but they're having trouble converting right now. And I know Quint loves their freshman goalie, Anderson Moore.
Yeah, I've been watching Georgetown. I watched Georgetown Loyola because I have Loyola this weekend. And then I watched Georgetown Hopkins because I have Hopkins this weekend. So I've seen both Georgetown games. Week one, I thought they were just not ready to play. You talk about connectivity on offense, sharing the ball, guys, you know, spacing, team O. Man, it was ugly. It was bad shot after bad shot. They have got some players who can get to the rack. Aiden Carroll can get to the rack. Haley's really their only true passer. And I thought Graham Bundy Jr. was forcing things. Well, you turn the page to week two, and they lose to Hopkins 11-9 at home. You can watch those highlights. They're on YouTube. But they looked dramatically better on offense. I mean, a huge positive shift. Really, really, really liked what I saw. So I'm actually kind of bullish on Georgetown long term. Still got some young faces on defense. And Clark, you mentioned this kid, Anderson Moore from Alabama. I mean, talent-wise, he's probably the most athletic goalie that I can recall in the last 10 years. He's in good hands. He's in good hands with David Schreiber. He just moves differently. I mean, he's got the movement skills of a Dobson in the PLL. He's got the movement skills of a John Galloway. He's a sensational athlete for the position. Game's still moving fast for him because he's made some mistakes and he's a little jumpy. But man, when he anchors himself and he learns this game, he's the best goalie prospect I've seen in a long, long time.
I think you're spot on. I saw him in high school playing in a game, and I went up to him. I said, "Where are you from?" He said, "Alabama." I'm like, "Wow, the game is growing." He's legit. Anderson Moore he's the type of guy that will put a team on his back, and as he gets accustomed to the flow of the game, I think the sky's the limit for this kid because he's so athletic and he has such pop in his game. You know, Quint, too, the other thing that's interesting to me with this Georgetown-Penn game is you mentioned they looked way better against Hopkins. That's Georgetown. This is their third game. This is Penn's first game. I'm anxious to see how scrimmages kind of translate into game one action, because from what I've heard, and we saw Virginia last week, they looked really, really good. I heard Penn went kind of toe-to-toe with Virginia in a scrimmage. The issue here is they haven't played an official game right now, and Georgetown's in week three of their season. So this is one of those games in the Ivy. The Ivy sometimes gets, you know, beat early in the season. I mean, I think the year that Yale won the national title, didn't they lose to Villanova in February?
Yeah, Yale's got all sorts of injuries early season. They're typically not the fastest starting team, but Nova, you know, Nova lost a ton. That's not a game that I'm going to call any kind of upset. The big teams in the country, the top three though this week, all are involved with games, Cotter, that they just have to be careful with. Duke and St. Joe's, Virginia, Richmond. Okay, Richmond took Maryland down to the wire. Virginia's feeling pretty good about themselves right now. That's a scary game, traveling to Richmond, very dangerous. And then Notre Dame, Marquette. Notre Dame's got a midweeker. Cleveland State on Wednesday, two touchdown favorites. They'll turn around and play Marquette, I believe, on Sunday. Marquette is much better than people realize. So I think you got three dicey games for the top trio.
Hey, do they have an indoor facility up at Marquette? That game's on the road, right?
They bubble it. They bubble it.
Okay. Because I was thinking that, like, imagine, and we talk about snowstorms. I've seen some games in Marquette that are like early in the season that are blizzard type of stuff. That could affect it too if the weather was bad, but they'll bubble it. So,
yeah, look, I watch those kind of games.
Marquette's got Valley Fields, right? With beautiful outdoor facility that like opens on April 28th.
They play like two games on that stadium.
Well, look, man, you watch a Michigan game, Michigan has their own stadium. And when you watch a Michigan game, I wear a jacket even when I watch it on TV. Like, it looks so cold there. But here's one for you, Quint. When you mentioned those top three teams, I actually froze last Tuesday. I went to watch BU in St. Joe's in person. It was in Westport, Connecticut, like 20 minutes from me. So I'm like, I'm going to watch this game live. I went there and absolutely froze. If you watched the first quarter and you saw the size of the guys and just it, like, you didn't see the goals, but you saw all the action in between, you would have thought that St. Joe's was going to beat BU by like 10. They had dudes, man. They had big dudes on attack, guys just running through dudes and hitting pipes. And it was a big size mismatch, I thought. But as the game progressed, BU was so skilled and so good in ball movement. They worked over St. Joe's, man. So St. Joe's has a lot of work to do if they want to play toe-to-toe with Duke. And, yeah, they've played Duke tough in the past. But I think the Patriot League, to what you were saying before, is really sneaking. A team like BU with so many guys back. If you look at their roster from a year ago to now, they have more fifth- and sixth-year guys than just about anyone.
Wrap things up. You know, to me, the coolest thing nowadays – the amount of games that are on ESPN Plus, how it makes our job a lot easier. We can just go to the archive and plug in a game and watch it. How many of these women's games are on? And this weekend alone, Florida, Carolina, women's Saturday, Northwestern, Notre Dame women's game Friday, the Maryland, Syracuse women's game Saturday, all on ESPN Plus. And then you've got, you know, people who are cutting these games up and putting highlight packages, you know, on YouTube or whatever. And thankfully they do that. But from my standpoint, you know, I remember 10, 15, 20 years ago, like you felt like you were like a private investigator trying to get in information on some of these teams. And now it's right there, which makes our job A, more enjoyable and B, a lot easier and more fun.
You know what, yeah. You know what I hope too, Clark, you saw this with Clemson. And Q, we were talking about this in the Virginia game, how so many kids are coming from like Highland Park and Dallas area and like some of these other cities. Wouldn't it be great if the ACC on the men's side could expand to some of these new schools like SMU, and they could do it, have success relatively quickly like Clemson? Like Clemson in the women's game is all of a sudden like, wow, they're really good and they're going to be really good. Wouldn't it be great if you could do that with expansion with some of these other places?
Clark, We've been to SMU, both of us, a lot, probably more than we should, more than our fair share.
Yeah,
that would be a great fit for one program.
The campus, the way that lacrosse is growing in Texas, would be a natural fit. But they'd also attract a lot of people from other states too, because there's a big contingency of regular students at SMU from the Northeast too. So you know, you want to get away, you want to go south. Here's the other thing, and I'll end with this. I love watching lacrosse as much, if not more, than anyone. I'm a complete junkie, right? I hope there will be a day where we can stagger these games. So on a Saturday, we could have a 12 o'clock game, a 2:30 game, 5 o'clock game, and a 7:30, kind of like college football. My one wish is, as the years progress, coaches start putting these games in different spots. And Syracuse did. I don't know if they did intentionally in their first 4 weeks of the season. It seems like everyone in lacrosse is watching Syracuse and they don't have any other game to watch. They're playing on a Monday night. They're playing Saturday at 6 p.m. this week. You know, they played on Friday last week. There's so many windows that everyone wants to just watch lacrosse. But when everyone's playing at noon on Saturday, it makes it really hard. So I guess my wish is we find a way. All these coaches come together. Maybe we go to the meeting. Maybe Cotter's behind us and we plead our case. He has a tank top in right after a lift and just says, let's move these games. Let's do it right.
It doesn't take much. I completely agree with you. That those Syracuse standalone games so far this season have exploded on the internet, on Twitter. They just get so many more eyeballs and so much play. And I give you the example of Georgetown Hopkins last weekend. It was a game that was totally lost in the shuffle. It was opposite. Nobody even knew what the final score was, let alone what happened. And so I completely agree with you. You know, we need more teams to play on Sundays. We need more teams to play on Fridays. We need more teams to play maybe on a Thursday night.
It's a recruiting advantage.
you know, I think these coaches, obviously there's some academic constraints in the Ivy League. A team like Notre Dame's got certain amounts of dates they can be off campus. But if you're truly invested in trying to advance your program and you're one of these head coaches who's probably too much concerned about his prospect day and not as much about the exposure and attendance at your home games, you got to be innovative and you got to play occasional games on Sunday or Friday night. It's a no-brainer, Kark. I am completely in agreement.
Yeah, like you think about when Monday Night Football first started, they said there was no way that was going to work. That was, think about how innovative that was. Lacrosse needs to kind of find their time slot. We had it a couple of years ago on the ACC network for a little bit on Thursday. I thought that might work. It didn't work out for a variety of reasons, but whether it's Friday, Sunday night, whatever it is, it needs to be Friday Night Lacrosse, Sunday Night Lacrosse. It needs to be appointment viewing. Who's playing on Friday night this week? Who's playing Sunday night this week? That's what everyone talks about in the NFL. Who's on Monday Night Football this week? That's what we need for lacrosse.
Completely agree with you. Kark, enjoy your snow day.
I got
Grace tonight for some little goalie clinic after school, and then we're going to the Tuesday night.
Maybe I'll send Grayson down on the Amtrak Acela down in Baltimore. You want to pick him up? He would do it, man. That's an adventure for him. You want him?
Send him to New York City for the day and have him walk around.
Oh my God. Can you imagine the Grace and Gray show? Both needling Q all day long, just everything.
I would pay anything to see that. you got to love your kids, man. We're along for the ride.
Enjoy Syracuse. Send pictures of that meal. Cotter, good luck finding a meathead gym.
I'll find it.
Can't wait to watch that, guys. You're the best. Love you both.
That's it for this week's episode of the Quintessential Podcast. Thank you to our guests. Thanks to our technical director, Dr. Nick Z. I want to thank you for listening. And of course, thanks to our sponsor, Axia Time. A watch. What a better gift than a ring. I've got a championship ring. It's collecting dust in a box. I wear watches all the time. Thank you, Axia Time. It's axiatime.com. And we'll see you next week.